Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshipper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come yet again, come. Let's do it once more. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshipper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come yet again, come. It worked. There are people who came in.
Come, you accidental pilgrims, you who find yourself on a journey of surprise and wonder. Come, you who emerge into this place as an act of liberation. Come, you who seek a life of mindfulness and a place to test your thoughts. Come, you who bring hearts of all kinds, heavy hearts, rusty hearts, hearts broken open in revelation, hearts full of love to share. Come, you who seek courage, and you who have more courage than you realize. Come, you who stand behind the curtain, gathering up the resources to claim your truth. Come, you who have been in a bubble, you who are poised for transformation. We begin our story again, gathering courage, love, mindfulness, and a sense of purpose. We gather as people of all ages, of different abilities, different backgrounds, and different perspectives. We share a covenant, a direction for our shared journey, and a commitment to encourage and challenge one another to spiritual growth. This path will ask much from us. Let us move forward with love. Let us move forward with appreciation for one another. Let us move forward knowing we are not alone. Whoever you are, whatever your gifts, you are welcome to join this journey. You are welcome this very day. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. I invite you now to welcome your friends and neighbors around you. If you're visiting for the first time and you have the courage to introduce yourself, please raise your hand for the microphone and join us for coffee after the service. I invite you to look at the announcements in your order of service. Our word courage comes from the French word cœur, or heart. Courage is a willingness to act from the heart, to let your heart lead the way, not knowing what will be required of you next, and if you can do it. Please stand as you are willing and able and join us in singing hymn number 42, Morning So Fair to See. As a community that cares for one another, we want to share the significant events of one another's lives so that we're known and supported. Together, our joys multiply and our sorrows diminish. If you have a joy or sorrow that you'd like to share with the congregation, now is your chance. It takes some courage to share, doesn't it?
Good morning, Dixie Moreau. I have two joys to share. I'm leaving tomorrow to Asheville, North Carolina, where my son is, and we're going to take a canoe trip and drive through the Great Smoky Mountains and see Asheville. And then my other joy is my five-year-old grandson was just started kindergarten, and he tested at reading fourth grade level, so they bumped him up to first grade.
Wow.
So we're very pleased that they're recognizing he needs a little bit extra.
That's great.
I have two joys that my grandma is here, and I got a blue belt in Taekwondo, and I'm joining the new elite class.
Thanks, Jake.
Hi, Scott Sonoda here. A bit of a sorrow. Our oldest daughter, Maeve, seems to have broken her wrist in what was supposed to be kind of a fun, friendly game of powder puff football for the high school, and it got a bit out of hand. So we're not entirely sure. The x-ray came back. Didn't quite show a break, but it certainly seems like a break. And that was a bit of a bummer for homecoming, too. So she went to homecoming dance in a sling, but she'll be all right.
Larry Weaver, I have had 2 weeks of joy with my daughter, who was here from Germany with 8 German 10th graders who were on an exchange program that Manhattan High will reciprocate by going to Germany in the spring. But secondly, I have a second joy. Yesterday, I had coffee with a former Unitarian when she was a teenager, and I was dealing with a teenage group here. She was part of the group that ran the Saturday pantry out of the breadbasket center down behind the Douglas Center annex. And talking with her just reminded me of what it means for, what's that, encouragement for spiritual growth in our congregations. Spiritual growth means doing the things that make you authentically yourself, and having that conversation with her just reminded me of that. These are the things that make me feel good about myself. They're the things that make her feel good about herself, and it was just a joyous experience.
I'm Harriet Yonke. I have a joy and a sorrow. I have a joy that I have had 3.5 years with my dear friend Wayne Mills from Abilene. He's been here maybe half a dozen times with me. He's now in hospice care in the Abilene Hospital and won't have much longer, I don't think. But he'll be 90 on Friday, and we were hoping to have a big birthday party, but I don't think he'll make it. But we've had 3.5 good years, and we knew because of our ages that we weren't going to have a lot of time, and so we didn't put things off. And we've been to Hawaii, and we've been to Mexico, and we've been a lot of places in the U.S. in those 3.5 years. And Jim Chantoin and Martian help us we took a drive up to Lake Superior where my husband and I used to have a cabin. And so we've made the most of it, and I'll be going over tomorrow and spending several days, I think.
Thank you.
I'm Karen Samuelson, and I grew up in this fellowship. I'm the daughter of Phoebe and Franz, and I'm back in town just briefly, and I just wanted to say thanks to John Alou and the fellowship for the support over the years.
Betty Banner, many of you know that my husband had a motorcycle accident a few weeks ago, and he asked me to thank everyone who sent cards and blessings. He's doing better and getting stronger every day. Thank you.
Ann Cowan, I have a joy. My brother and sister-in-law are here with me from Massachusetts visiting for two whole days. So that is a joy.
Hello.
Sorry, just real quick. They say don't quit your day job, but I did. So I'm going to focus on running my piano studio, and I have some amazing students here from the UU, but I'm very excited to kind of focus on having a small business, so wish me luck.
Yay. Good luck. Thank you all for having the courage to share what was on your mind. Now it's time for our story for all ages. You who are young or young at heart, please come up and join us in this wonderful little story.
Okay. Thank you. Hi, I'm Shannon, and I'm the father of Keaton and Kieran, right there. And today we're going to be reading a story called Sky Color. But before we get started, I just have a few quick questions for you. So, who thinks they can tell me what courage means? Okay, Keaton?
Self-esteem.
Self-esteem, okay. So when you have enough guts to do something scary that you may not want to do, okay?
Being brave.
Being brave.
It's being able to be yourself without fear of being, you know, told off. You know that you're going to be brave enough to be yourself.
So being brave enough to be yourself without being told off, kind of like Larry said, actually living authentically, right? Kind of true to yourself. Anybody else on courage? Yeah.
Courage is when you feel like that you could do something that might actually challenge you.
Okay, so courage is when you feel like you can do something that will challenge you, right? So, well, kind of shifting from that, because this book deals with both courage and something else. It deals with art. So how do we, what is the definition of art? Yeah.
There is no definition. It can be almost anything.
So it can be almost anything? Yes. Okay, never mind. Okay, that's quite artistic, actually. I think it's difficult to define. Yeah.
To me, art is whatever you want it to be.
Whatever you want it to be?
It's just beautiful, whatever it is.
It's just beautiful, whatever it is? Okay. So, well, how do you have to be courageous to make art or to be an artist or to live artistically? Well, how do those things intersect, courage and art?
Put yourself into that art, and you have to be brave enough to let yourself feel those emotions.
Okay, great, great. So bravery, the bravery part is kind of being in touch with your emotions and, you know, and not considering those issues of failure, because art goes beyond judgment, like you were saying, of success or failure. Okay, so they work together so you can be yourself, right? You can be yourself, but you can also kind of live authentically through your art. So this is a book called Sky Color, and it's by Peter H. Reynolds. Get a little preview. All right. Marisol was an artist. She loved to draw and paint. And she even had her very own art gallery. So your art gallery, it's on the refrigerator, right? You know, some people would argue that only art, you know, only galleries, you know, those buildings, those special buildings where you go see art. But of course, art is everywhere. Yeah. You have a gallery at your house where your mom hangs your pictures? That's awesome. That's fantastic. Not all her art hung in a gallery. Much of it she shared with the world. She painted posters to share ideas she believed in. It's a picture of Save the Ocean. At school, Marisol was famous for her creative clothes, her box of art supplies, and her belief that everybody was an artist. That kind of goes back to that living authentically, right? So the art wasn't just on the page. It was this belief that anybody could be an artist, and it even extended to the way that she dressed. Yes, Marisol was an artist through and through. So when her teacher told the class they were going to paint a mural for the library, Marisol couldn't wait to begin. The classroom buzzed with the sound of brainstorming. The students talked and sketched. Together, they made a great big drawing. Then they marched to the library. "I'll paint a fish. I'll paint one too. I'll paint the ocean," Marisol shouted. "I'll paint the sky." Marisol rummaged through the box of paint, but could not find any blue. How am I going to make the sky without blue paint? Okay, maybe make a sunset. That's a really good question. How are they going to make the ocean without blue? Well, maybe the end will kind of answer that. We'll see. The bell rang. It was time to put their brushes down for the day. As she climbed aboard the bus, Marisol kept wondering. She's looking out the window. All the way home, she stared out the window, looking at the sky. The sun lowered closer to the horizon. Later at home, Marisol watched day turn into night. That night, Marisol settled into a deep dream. She drifted through a sky swirling with colors. The colors mixed, making too many to count. In the morning, Marisol stood waiting for the bus in the rain. The sky was not blue. She smiled. At school, Marisol raced to the library. She grabbed a dish and began adding colors. This one, then that one. She swirled the brush to make an altogether new color. Marisol then began painting on the wall. A boy asked, "What color is that?" "That," Marisol said, "that is sky color." So if you can see, and I'll show this to everyone, it's all kinds of different colors, right?
How did they make the ocean blue?
I bet they mixed colors to get that blue hue. So my question for you is, if this book is about art and courage, how did Marisol have to be courageous?
Right.
she had to believe in herself that it could be something beyond just kind of simply blue, something more creative, something that she believed in. It didn't have to be kind of what everyone just expects the sky to be blue, right? Yeah, she tried to find different colors, right? Different ways of looking at it, ways that people didn't really expect. What were you going to say, Keaton? Oh, okay. Great. Well, thank you.
The offering is a sacrament of the Free Church. It is supported by the voluntary generosity of all who join with us. The offering will now be given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values.
Since Katie's sick today, I'll read the poem. If we do not venture out an adaptation of a poem by Marnie Harmony, if we do not venture out, if on a starlit night with the moon brightly shimmering, we stay inside and do not venture out, the evening universe remains a part of life we shall not know. If on a cloudy day, with grayness infusing all, and dancing rivers in the grass, we stay inside and do not venture out, the stormy, threatening energy of the universe remains a part of life we shall not know. If, on a frosty morning, dreading the chill air before sunrise, we stay inside and do not venture out, the awesome cold, quiet, and stillness of the dawn universe remains a part of life we shall not know. If, throughout these grace-given days, given days of ours, surrounded as we are by green life and brown death, hot pink joy and cold gray pain, and miracles, always miracles, if we stay inside ourselves and do not venture out, then the fullness of the universe will be unknown to us, and our locked hearts shall never feel the rush of worship. And so in the silence we now share, may we listen deeply for that still and small, but brave and bold voice within ourselves that calls us to risk and reach, to open and emerge, to venture out into the newness waiting to be known.
Thanks, Lindsay. So I'm not sure that I could really define courage any better than those children did. That was pretty amazing. The shame researcher Brené Brown writes that ordinary courage is about putting our vulnerability on the line. She says that in order to do that, we have to practice authenticity, which is about showing up and being real. But I was thinking about it, and what if you don't know how to be real? What if you've been living in a bubble or you haven't really ever slowed down long enough to pay attention to what's calling you? It takes courage to really examine your life and your values. You probably have to step out of your comfort zone or choose plan B. I like the story Sky Color that Shannon shared. Little Marisol had a belief that there was only one way to paint the sky. What could she do when there was no blue? If this was a more realistic tale, she probably would have complained to the principal or maybe whined to her parents, and she would have been gone to Walmart and gotten blue. At least that's how it would have happened in my family. But in this little story, she chooses to slow down and to pay attention. She lets go of her expectations until she arrives at another, more authentic version of what the sky can actually be. I identify with this as I've had to let go of a lot of my expectations. 5 years ago, I sat in the minister's office here and cried about how my life was crumbling away. I was probably equally upset about my marriage, but also about that my life's plan was not working out. I had this vision for how it had to be. Plan B was not an option. I was challenged with the question, but what does Kim want? What makes you happy? And I was so frustrated. I wanted this. I wanted this thing I was crying about. I wanted my life exactly the way I had it. And he just kind of shook his head sadly. I obviously didn't know what he was talking about. The best that I could do when he pushed me to come up with something that I liked was that I liked flowers. It felt like just such a lame answer, but that was all I had. So I proceeded to try to patch everything together by being what I thought was expected of me. When I was really, truly lost and that wasn't working, I finally started to slow down. I journaled, and I read a lot, and I practiced yoga. I wasn't trying to become a better person. I just really didn't know what else to do. But through all this listening to myself, I got to know myself better. I eventually discovered that I had more courage than I realized. Courage to me does not feel like strength or confidence like I would have expected. It feels more like fear or like jumping into the deep end and you don't know what's going to happen. Now I understand that a journey of courage has to come from authenticity. Otherwise, it becomes a journey of ego and trying to prove your worth. It's not easy, and I don't always do it. Being real means removing your armor, coming out of your safe cocoon where your fragile wings can be hurt. I often feel, like right now, that my heart's outside my body. I'm a lot more sensitive than I used to be, but I'm also more connected to my values. I don't think I would be a teacher now had I not started allowing myself to be more vulnerable. And the way that I see that happening is that about a year and a half ago, I was struggling to make a living. I worked in this wonderful place surrounded by art, and I had an important-sounding title, but I couldn't pay my bills. My friend Ellen offered me a part-time job washing dogs, And my reaction was me. I felt above it. I mean, I had these business cards that had my title on it and everything. But I decided to put aside my ego, and I took the job. It turns out I loved it. Washing all those dogs felt nurturing. It didn't matter if they were purebred and they had fancy names or if they were mangy mutts named Billy Bob. They all needed their ears and their feet washed. They all looked at me as if to say, please help me. In some indirect philosophical way that probably only makes sense to me, this job turned into me realizing that I wanted more nurturing work, only more with kids and less with dogs. I connected a lot of dots that I'd made through journaling and listening to myself, and I realized that becoming a teacher could be the solution. That was never a plan of mine. That was never something I wanted. But all of a sudden, it seemed like the answer for what I needed. Going to graduate school began the year that my daughter likes to call my midlife crisis, but I refer to it as my metamorphosis. I'm now a sixth grade teacher. I try not to cry in front of them. I teach 22 11-year-olds who are in the thick of tween angst. It takes a lot of courage in itself. Showing up with my whole self every day is hard work, but it's wholehearted work, which is something I didn't really have before. For me, the journey of authenticity started by listening for the still small voice within myself and beginning my story again. But it led to a sense of purpose and wonder that I would not have known otherwise. Namaste. Now we sing. Please stand as you're willing and sing number 135, How Happy Are They?
We've heard already this morning some alternative views of courage, because I think for many of us initially when we hear the word courage, it evokes an image of macho men striding into battle, you know, either in some ancient realm on armor on horseback or with machine guns blaring. And maybe you picture the confusion of the D-Day invasion Steven Spielberg created in Saving Private Ryan, or visualize Mel Gibson in Braveheart, or remember the chorus from Tennyson's Charge of the Light Brigade, cannon to the right of them, cannon to the left of them. Maybe you associate courage with valor, boldness, and daring do. It's like that superhero courage, something you see from Wonder Woman or Batman, but they're fiction. And maybe that's one kind of courage. Too often, though, that bravado has been mustered to hide the depth of fear that someone feels. Do you call it courage when someone charges forward only because everyone else is? Is it courage if soldiers have been conditioned to discount the humanity of the people they're fighting? I don't know the answer to that. I watched Ken Burns' Vietnam series. I'm sure some of the rest of you did. And it pushed me to wonder about courage in war. I heard stories there of soldiers who were very frightened but kept pushing forward. One soldier who had earned the Silver Cross for valor commented that it wasn't courage at all that had moved him. It was being reactive and trying to survive. Another commented that with the landmines planted over the area, just to walk day after day was courage. And one man who didn't go to Vietnam talked about how defecting to Canada had been the bravest thing that he had ever done. Images and ideas of courage differ and almost seem to clash. Now, those of you who are my age and older remember those times of Vietnam. I recall the older brother of a high school friend of mine who described that his unit was so frightened in Vietnam that they holed up in one spot, hiding in the jungle, occasionally moving around just enough to periodically radio in concocted reports of killed Viet Cong. I remember another friend who had worked for the Stars and Stripes, the Armed Forces newspaper, showing slides. He had never shown these to anyone, and it was many years later, but showing slides he had taken during the war. And he dwelt on one particular photo where American soldiers had flushed out skinny, barefoot boys from the tunnels. And I remembered his reflection. Yes, he said, they were lobbing grenades and shooting machine guns, but how do you get motivated to kill children? Is that courage? Well, some of you know much more about wartime courage than I do. You've been through it. Most of us have not. I'm wondering even more about everyday courage and how we muster that. The courage to confront a boss who's treating people unfairly. The courage to have a hard conversation with a spouse or partner about the future of your relationship. The courage to acknowledge your own failures to your children. The courage to draw and enforce strict boundaries with an alcoholic or drug addict. As motivational writer and artist Marianne Rademacher has said, courage doesn't always roar. Sometimes courage is the quiet voice at the end of the day saying, I will try again tomorrow. Courage does require facing fear head on, neither denying it or reacting against it. Courage recognizes that there will be pain, loss, or embarrassment. In short, acknowledges where we are and owns up to our vulnerabilities, even leaning into them. Showing vulnerability always creates risk. I think about Timothy Treadwell, the grizzly man, the guy who went out and lived with the bears in Alaska, risking vulnerability, but a really stupid risk because grizzlies kill you. And they did him. Foolish risk-taking is not courage. It's denial of reality. So, we don't want to be stupid. We need to be realistic about our vulnerability. Okay, here's real. I hate being vulnerable. Simply reading the synonyms for vulnerable makes me uncomfortable. Susceptible, weak, defenseless, helpless, exposed. In that discomfort with vulnerability, I think I'm like a lot of Unitarian Universalists. We like believing that we have power and can do things, including changing ourselves, but most particularly changing the world through the simple exertion of our will. We like to imagine that we are strong, self-reliant, and independent. Maybe more than other folks, we identify with the superhero. So if there's a giver and a receiver of care, we want to be the giver, not the recipient. Of course, I'm overgeneralizing. But our approach to life tends to focus on the active and can-do style of living. And maybe that dates back to Emerson's essay on self-reliance. So what happens when we're not there, when we're not feeling that strength, self-reliance? When we can't even stand the idea of getting out of bed in the morning? When we find ourselves in a victim role, maybe literally beaten, it can happen, or figuratively abused by the world? It happens in so many ways. When we find ourselves ill or injured, when we're struck by depression, when we're fearful about our future, our security, when we lose someone we love, when we lose a job, when bullies threaten us, when we find ourselves a victim of discrimination or unfairness, when our children are in trouble, when we're desperately embarrassed or ashamed, when we age, when we hurt physically or emotionally, when we remember the hurts of our past, when we turn our anger or resentment in on ourselves and sabotage ourselves again. Those are the times when we need courage. Now, some spiritual advisors tell us that our vulnerabilities are actually gifts. Sure, that's easy for them to say. They're not experiencing it. Whatever the cause, the complex of feelings that shuts us down or sends us into panic attacks does not feel like an asset. This sitting with difficult feelings and circumstances does not feel like it has any value at all. It hurts. So we resist our feelings, suppressing them or ignoring them, bucking up, trying to be brave, putting on a front of invulnerability. I saw a cartoon on a friend's Facebook page. It said, "Put your church face on," and the characters in the picture put on these masks with these little round happy faces like emoticons. I hope that's not how we have to come to church. I hope that we can be brave enough to be real. Real courage might be being in touch with our vulnerabilities, knowing them, integrating them, and acting with full knowledge of how we are vulnerable. Speaking our genuine feelings of weakness and inadequacy can open up possibilities that we didn't recognize. I think we saw that in Kim's story, and she talked about researcher Brené Brown, who, by the way, has an excellent TED Talk on vulnerability. If you haven't seen it, you might want to check that out. And Brown says that embracing vulnerability is one of the key characteristics of people who feel connected and loved. Taking the risks can allow others to open up a crack in their own superhero costume, letting down their defenses, creating connection. Brown said this in an interview. I can tell you as a researcher, 11,000 pieces of data, I cannot find a single example of courage, moral courage, spiritual courage, leadership courage, relational courage. I cannot find a single example of courage that was not born completely out of vulnerability. We buy into some mythology about vulnerability being weakness and being gullibility and being frailty because it gives us permission not to do it. Now, I can't help but think back on the story of David and Goliath. You all know the story, the little shepherd boy with the slingshot up against the giant Philistine bully. Do you remember the part about David's preparation for going onto the field? King Saul tried to give David his armor, his bronze helmet and his sword, and it was all so big and heavy, it hung off the little shepherd, and it was so heavy that David couldn't even move, and so he took it all off, all the armor, and went off with only his shepherd's staff, his sling, and 5 smooth stones, completely vulnerable. But knowing his strengths and weaknesses, grounded in his authentic self, filled somehow with courage. Not an easy thing to do, to stand and face what provokes our fear with no armor or helmet. Vulnerable, but knowing our strengths and weaknesses, knowing ourselves. Vulnerability can crack us open suddenly and widely. When war or terrorism strikes, for example, the late UU minister Forrest Church wrote about the atmosphere in New York City in the aftermath of 9/11. Strangers asked one another if they were okay. Neighbors extended themselves like family. He quotes someone whose failing marriage actually mended in those difficult days. Somehow, said the woman, in the midst of this tragedy, we found each other. And Church adds, the shadow of death brought them back to life again. Now, I used to live in Oklahoma City, where we knew something about terrorism and courage. We came through a terrorist attack, too, and found ourselves strengthened rather than weakened by it. I didn't live there at the time of the bombing, but members of my family did, and I lived there afterwards. And I watched as a shared tragedy brought a city together. The strength came not because of fortifications or building more barriers to outsiders or to one another, but because of a renewed civic pride built by connecting with one another in vulnerability, a courage that came from vulnerability and sharing. And sharing that kind of intense experience creates bonds unlike others. It's the bonds of war, of surviving natural disaster, the sense that we were all there suffering and we lived through it. And we can artificially create something similar when we share about different experiences that link us somehow. I was part of a feminist consciousness-raising group in the 1980s. Yes, the 80s. Consciousness-raising arrived in West Virginia a little late. None of us had the same experiences, but opening up to be vulnerable about what had happened to us, from rape to abortion to domestic violence to disrespect in the workplace to inequality at home, sharing those things generated community. What had weakened and hurt us individually strengthened and healed us, gave us courage. And I've experienced the same thing in conversations about other sensitive and personal topics like sexual orientation and race. In the right environment, with trust and commitment to stick through the tough spots, honesty, confession, and openness, vulnerability can produce compassion, connection, and courage to move forward. I've also seen it go badly when someone's pain was too deep for a group to salve, or when someone wasn't heard or someone wasn't able to speak their truth. The risk that exists with vulnerability is always real, if not always as dire as we might predict. The risk deepens and broadens whenever we talk about something larger than our personal lives. I'm convinced that one of the reasons that wars break out is because leaders are trying so hard to appear strong rather than weak. Fear of vulnerability leads to careless posturing, which leads to the same fears on the other side and more careless posturing, and then next thing you know, everything is blown up. We saw that in Vietnam. Our leaders focused on the anti-communist bluster, pouring resources after resources into the muck without acknowledging the problems, the real challenges, the vulnerabilities we had, until too late. And in these days of anxious hotspots from Korea to Russia to the Middle East, and leaders who are not always self-aware and reflective, I fear the same kind of scenario. Leaders trying to prove their courage and deny their vulnerability are ready to provoke, and they're obtuse about the reasons not to. The dangers of trying to appear strong crop up in all areas of life. White nationalists masked their fears behind tiki torches in Charlottesville and lurk on social media under pseudonyms. In too many places in our own country in recent years, we have watched armored police vehicles facing down crowds. The show of strength alienates people, backfiring, firing up crowds even more. Confrontation may seem like the only option in crisis, but for example, in policing, they say there's more long-term effectiveness in community policing, where officers are assigned to develop relationships and problem-solve more than face down or outgun wrongdoers. Instead of armored cars, the cop might be on foot or bicycle. They're vulnerable. And in the long run, people facing one another without a lot of weapons and armor between them makes for more effective relationship, more effective human interaction. I can think of situations where the weapons and armor were not literal, but where the humanity was so deeply buried that armor was a good symbol for what people were doing. I've seen it in organizations, I've seen it in families. Burdened by our own feelings and experiences, we refuse to allow an opening for our own and one another's humanity. Invulnerable in appearance, swaggering, tough, but underneath, hurt, fearful, mourning. Where is the courage in that? Consider another great fictional character, the Cowardly Lion from The Wizard of Oz. You remember how it happens? He leaps out early when he first appears in the movie, growling and menacing little Toto. And he's quickly revealed as having no courage at all, only bravado, as he dissolves into tears when Dorothy stands up to him. But as he embraces his fears, acknowledges it to his new friends, and works with them on their project to get the Wicked Witch's broomstick, he musters the courage to sneak into the castle to rescue Dorothy. Why do we put on the bravado instead of working through and embracing the vulnerabilities? And I'm saying we quite deliberately, because I know I'm as human as everyone else in this. It's because we're afraid and want to feel strong. And because the spiritual work necessary to embrace and integrate our vulnerability is so difficult, we may not even know where to begin. There's so much to lose. What if I tell you who I really am and you don't like it? What if you reject me? What if I share feelings that are close to the bone and you take advantage of me rather than reciprocate? What if I only prove what we both already suspect, that my authentic self is not adequate to face the challenge in front of us? Or simply, I am not adequate. In the family crisis, we may end up yelling and screaming at one another and making deeper wounds that we never heal. In church, we may see people leave, abandoning a commitment they used to love. No wonder we're afraid. There's so much to lose. But that's where courage shores us up. But bravado does not substitute for true courage. How do we find courage? Life coach Adam Sachinsky made some suggestions that sound to me like focused spiritual work. He says to recall past successes. When have you found courage before? Remembering can help us channel our best selves into repeating the experience. Or even consider other people's successes. When have you seen people exhibit courage? What can you learn from their ways so you can imitate them? Plan ahead. Think what may happen and consider your responses so you're prepared rather than reacting in the moment when you're surprised. Keep your questions focused on solutions. How can I get through this? What will come next? Where can I find opportunities in this situation? And create empowering mantras. It may feel foolish to tell yourself over and over again, I am courageous, but it actually does work. Eventually, you find out you are. Don't hide your fears, but explore them, for example, by journaling. Use relaxation techniques to manage your fear, to build your courage muscles. Try things that you're afraid of, maybe speaking in front of the group or talking to a stranger. Take the small steps, and in time, you'll be ready to tackle the larger ones. And another good way of practicing is to help others be courageous. Staying with them, encouraging them, and supporting will build your courage. I want to remind you of the heroic woman who faced a school shooter a few years ago. I may have told this story before. It has such power, and it's a favorite of mine. Antoinette Tuff, a bookkeeper at a school outside Atlanta, told the emergency dispatcher that 20-year-old Michael Hill, standing in front of her with an assault rifle, wanted the police to back off, but that he didn't really want to shoot the children. In 25 long minutes, on the phone with 911, she also commiserated with Michael. She saw his vulnerability when he confessed he had nothing to live for. And she relayed her own experience of having attempted suicide. Let's see, she said, if we can work it out so that you don't have to go away with them for a long time. Here was a distraught young man with a gun, and Miss Tuff was utterly vulnerable. But she saw his vulnerability too. She recognized his humanity and exposed her own. She showed true courage. So finally, he laid down his gun. And she said, "It's going to be all right, sweetheart. I just want you to know that I love you, though, okay? And I'm proud of you. That's a good thing that you're just giving up, and don't worry about it. We all go through something in life." And as the police rushed in, she defended him, saying, "All he's got is his phone." Now, this story did make the news, but not to the extent of the stories of the gunmen who end up killing or being killed or both. This story of risk and courage and vulnerability is more instructive, though, than the stories that end up in carnage and destruction. It teaches us that even when real weapons are drawn, shared humanity can keep us safe. And that's what I believe the cowardly lion and the shepherd boy David discovered too. Showing your humanity, your vulnerability, allows you to build bonds with others that strengthen you and help you bring your own inner resources to the problem, whatever it may be. It's not an easy teaching. I don't like being vulnerable. When I'm challenged, I want to respond in kind, aggressively, not backing down, especially if it's a battle of words rather than guns. But I have learned, maybe it's aging, that that's not real courage. That's adrenaline. That's being reactive and trying to survive. Courage is being open enough to hear what the other's words are saying, refusing a tit for tat, and striving to maintain or grow the fabric of relationship. It requires being in touch with my own feelings and imagining what feelings the other may be experiencing, and then taking the risk of communication, acknowledging that my feelings were hurt or that I noticed sadness in your eyes. The hardest part sometimes is not admitting my vulnerability to someone else, but admitting it to myself. Here, there's not necessarily the reward of support and bonding, only the apparent risk of losing a self-image bolstered by lies I've told myself. When we admit to ourselves our own weaknesses, shortcomings, griefs, vulnerabilities, we acknowledge that we can be hurt, that we are not in complete control of our lives, and that ultimately we are mortal and we will die. And that's one of the hardest truths in all religion. In all of human life, really, we are mortal and we will die. What's more, on the journey toward death, we will make mistakes, we will embarrass ourselves, we will lose things and people that are really important to us. We will be afraid, sad, and angry. We will be ill, regretful, and lonely. We will be vulnerable. We are vulnerable, more than any of us ever really want to believe. If we respond, not in denial of our vulnerability, but in recognition of it, then we can grow from it. Our inner spiritual muscles are strengthened, and we can find the guts to do what we need to do. As I learn my own motivations better, I find it easier to navigate through others' motivations. But if I don't pay attention to my vulnerabilities, the places I hurt that I don't want anyone else to see, then I can't muster real courage. I've also learned through years of therapy, pastoral education, consciousness raising, nonviolent communication, spiritual direction, and other small group interventions, the value of learning about myself with other people. Sometimes I see it happen in church, too. I believe church is a great place to practice being human, which means being vulnerable, sharing ourselves together, learning more about ourselves and others. And in the process, building community and commitment. As we do that, we become brave. We know others have our backs, and that we can trust ourselves. Poet and writer Maya Angelou described in an interview her mother's teaching about courage. She said, "I would say she encouraged me to develop courage, and she taught me by being courageous herself. And after years of leaving her, and I think becoming courageous, I realized that one isn't born with courage. One develops it. And you develop it by doing small, courageous things in the same way that one wouldn't set out to pick up a 100-pound bag of rice. If that's one's aim, the person would be advised to pick up a 5-pound bag and then a 10-pound and then a 20-pound and so forth until one builds up enough muscle to actually pick up 100 pounds. And that's the same way with courage. You develop courage by doing courageous things, small things, but things that cost you some exertion, mental and, I suppose, spiritual exertion. We have a few minutes if there are thoughts that have emerged for you during this time. And I think Jean is getting the microphone ready.
Well, yesterday I had I was feeling real good, and I actually took a, you know how you go from Newton all the way down through I-70 through Salina and all that? Well, I felt so good, and I was like, I'm going to take, I took the courage, and I took an alternate route home, the back roads, 15, and it was just stepping out of my comfort zone. It was real cool. I was like, oh, wow, I've never been down this way before. So it's like the Supertramp song, take a long way home. So that's what I did.
Small steps.
Yeah.
Small steps, small courageous steps.
I think this is a great time to thank some members of our fellowship who stepped up to work at the pro-choice bar at the state fair. I think it took great courage to make that move.
Yes.
I always have to bring it back to Star Trek. That's what I do. So something that I've really enjoyed about Star Trek is that when you have two ships interacting and there's like tension between them, they can't communicate or transport people over if the shields are up. And I think that's a really great metaphor for this idea that, yes, you can protect yourself, but you're going to be isolated when you do that. And so I think that's a really interesting concept.
Good image. Good image. The shields are the armor.
I'm Jade. This is my first time here. And I really like the thought of like building up to be courageous. But I've noticed with myself, I kind of just jump into it and I do something, whether that's good or bad. I mean, like just even today, just kind of coming and...
And speaking.
And sometimes I think by doing that, you just figure out that, you know, you can do it, but there are certain things that you have to like build up to. So, but yeah, thanks for having me today also.
Well, I think we're ready to join in the first, let me say this. May we all develop courage. May we all develop courage by doing courageous things, small things, but things that costs some spiritual exertion. Our closing hymn is number 295. Sing out praises for the journey. Please rise in body or spirit.
May you be brave enough to expose your aching woundedness and reveal your vulnerability. May you speak your deepest truths, knowing that they will change as you do. May you sing the music within you, composing your own melody, playing your song with all your heart. May you draw, paint, sculpt, and sew, showing the world your vision. May you write letters, poetry, biography, slogans, graffiti, the great novel, laying bare your words to love and hate. May you love, even though your heart breaks again and again. And until the end of your days, may your life be filled with possibilities and courage. Go in peace.